Nothing prepared me for how dreary traveling across three states in the scorching heat of day could be. Not the bottles of water in my car or the music blasting through my radio was enough company for hours upon endless hours of road that ran through forests and deserts. Not the muse I had and mirages that formed in the road ahead and disappeared into nothingness when approached. The need for human interaction superseded all else, and I regretted the lockdown that came with the pandemic. This pandemic disease that had started as a simple matter on the news had taken over the world. They said it was a virus with a high mortality rate and could be transmitted just as easily as it ravaged the body. Flights were canceled and trains were put out of service until they figured it out. And perhaps in my mind, this was the worst of all of the effects of the pandemic. The fact that it was absolutely horrifying did not affect the mind as much as it modified human relationships in a matter of months. I suspected I would be at home with my computer, watching the news and waiting out the mess, if it were not for the absolute necessity of my dying father, whom I had to go see. Mother had warned me to be safe, but I could not allow it, knowing I could help see my father again before he was no more. So, I drove on the deserted highway with my music turned high and my mind wholly secured on reaching him. I suspect that the road was not always as empty as it was now, because it had an eerie vacancy in the distance without the distraction of other cars coming and going. The effect of such loneliness was so immense that when I finally came around to finding a gas station, I almost leaped out of my car for joy. I had most of the things I needed in my car, gas and food, but the pleasure of human interaction, which I had missed for long hours, made me pull over. All I needed to do, I said to myself, was get something and strike a conversation for no more than 5 minutes and I would be on my way, refreshed. The gas pumps clicked and hummed when I pulled my vehicle in, but there was still that vacant feeling in the atmosphere as there were no cars around to fetch gas. The business place was open, and it quickly took my mind away from that dreary feeling. I stopped at the third pump for no other reason than the fact that it felt right. I debated bringing my licensed pistol with me to the pump, but I decided against it because there didn't seem to be a present threat. The possibility that I could pose a threat with a gun on me helped my decision. So I made my saunter to the counter with a few dollars in my pocket and the rest of my effect on the car seat. Hello! A bald-headed man with a chipped tooth wearing an apron saluted from behind the counter. His hand dropped to his side, but his smile remained.
It's been a while since anyone's driven past these parts.
I grinned and asked him if he had not heard of the pandemic. He wheezed in laughter, throwing his hand in the air. He claimed it was all just government propaganda to control the masses. He was doing just well for himself, he said, away from all the garbage of society. I snickered. It was not a conversation that I was willing to pursue, and he perceived it. I gave him my money and asked for gas on pump 3.
Where are you going from here?
He asked, as he worked his way around his device to discharge gas to me. I thought it was a strange question, and I blanched. I had the better sense to tell him my travel was none of his business, as his strangeness had begun to make me uneasy. I'm going to see my father, I answered instead. He nodded. He said he had a father once, but the man had been a bother, too much of a bother that he could take none of it. I said my father was no bother.
I would not understand, he said.
He had a peculiar situation with his father. I looked around and asked him if he ran the gas station with his father.
I used to, he replied.
I feigned concern, realizing he may have suffered some tragedy. Then he turned vicious.
But I snapped that guy. Too many complaints and too much of a fuss.
I whimpered, as though I hadn't heard him correctly. He paused, realizing he had said too much. I saw the patch of his bald head all the way to his face drain white and bloodless as he went over the circumstance in his head. Does anybody know about this? I asked, and regretted asking.
A few people, he said carefully. Not any like you. I keep them.
The tip of my lips twitched, and I felt a sudden chill run up my spine. In his eyes, the truth lay potent and forceful. I knew he wasn't lying. The environment and the loneliness lent him credence. This was a man capable of taking me out, confessing his serial murders to me as though it were no mean feat. My stomach rejected the thought with a quarrelsome grumble. He heard it and sniffed my dread. Droplets of sweat from the side of my face started to poke out from my pores. Gas in pump 3, please, I said, and walked towards the door, knowing I was yet to escape him. The voices in my head banged, and my eardrums thrummed with the beat of my heart. I closed my hands into a tight fist as I walked slowly to my car. I had walked a few steps from the store when I noticed another footstep had joined me in the march. A sense of dread, knowing he was behind me, almost crippled me. I was so afraid. I forcefully inhaled to get air into my lungs. I knew turning around was dangerous, so I did not turn around until I was beside my car. And there he was in the reflective glass, holding a pickaxe above my head. He swung hard, and I ducked out of the way by a hair's breadth. His axe shattered my glass window. In my desperation to survive, I knew I had very limited chances of surviving the deranged gas station owner, chief of which was the pistol I kept in the driver's seat. I knew it. He did not. You can't leave! You can't leave! He bellowed, swinging his axe at me, and it caught me by the shirt. The blade sliced a shallow cut into my flesh. I shoved my hand into the driver's seat where I had kept my pistol and drew it out. He bleached when he saw how quickly I wielded my pistol, and my terror was now his. In the final seconds before I pulled my trigger, his eyes turned beastly in rage to consume me. But it was over before he could move as I placed one between his eyes. I was on my way from that strange gas station in a blink, still reeling in the horror of what could have been.
A few weeks ago, I went to visit my grandparents in Nebraska. It had been a couple years since I'd seen them, and I was really excited to go, even though I always got a weird feeling when I visited their town. It was so small and isolated, the kind of place where everyone knew each other. I got a late start. By about 10 at night, I was still on the road. It was a pretty empty stretch of highway, and I hadn't seen cars for a while. I noticed that my gas was pretty low, so as soon as I saw a gas station, I pulled in to fill up my tank. The place seemed very run down. There were cornfields behind the station. No other cars were there. I pulled up to the only pump they had and tried to use my card, but the card reader wasn't working. I'd have to go inside. I walked into the gas station, but no one was inside. "Hello?" I called out. Then a young guy walked out of the bathroom. He seemed surprised to see me. I guess they didn't get a lot of customers at this time of night. The first thing I noticed about him was his really pale blue eyes. They were so light, he almost looked blind. And he didn't seem to blink at all. He just stared at me as he walked closer. I told him that I needed to buy some gas. He smiled and walked behind the counter. As he got closer, I noticed that he had red stains all down his shirt. He was wearing an old white shirt, not a uniform, and it looked like it was stained with blood. He must have noticed me staring at his shirt, because he laughed and said it was just paint. I thought that was a very strange thing to say. For one, it didn't look like paint, and for another, it didn't make sense for someone to use bright red paint in a gas station bathroom. Something wasn't right. I forced a smile and gave him a 20. He took my money, but then he didn't do anything. I waited for him to type in the amount so I could get my gas and leave, but it seemed like he didn't know how the machine worked. Then he started pushing some buttons, but I could tell that he was pretending to know what he was doing. I felt myself slowly back away from him. I knew I had to get out of there.
"Is something wrong?" he asked me.
"No," I said. "Nothing's wrong, thank you." I started to hurry out of the gas station, but he shouted at me to stop. I froze right in front of the door. "Is there a problem?" I asked.
"You tell me," he said.
Then he typed in something else in his machine, and I heard a beep.
Your payment went through, he said. I sighed. Maybe I was scared over nothing. Maybe he was just a worker with paint on his shirt. Without looking at him, I thanked him and ran out. I rushed to my car. I thought about just jumping in and driving away, but my gas was very low. I'd already paid, and the strange man was still inside. So I lifted the nozzle and started pumping my own gas. As I was filling up, I kept staring at the station, making sure that the man wasn't coming out. My cell rang in my pocket, which made me jump. I pulled out my phone and saw that my grandma was calling. I answered it. Hearing her familiar voice instantly calmed me down. She asked where I was, and I told her the name of the gas station. Oh, she said, Rudy's place. I know the owner. Tell him hi for me. Can you tell me what Rudy looks like? I asked. Grandma said that Rudy was a 50-something man with a beard. Definitely not the guy I'd seen. Someone else working here tonight, I told her. Are you sure? She asked. Rudy's always there. Unless he's taking time off to be with his son. Before I could ask her anything else, Grandma explained that Rudy's son had just gotten released from prison. She mentioned the son's piercing blue eyes. That's when I knew that she was describing the man I just met. What was he in prison for? Manslaughter, Grandma said. He was always a violent kid. Poor Rudy had his hands full. I felt a shiver run down my back. I told my grandma that I'd see her soon, and then ended the call. I put the nozzle back in place and jumped into my car. I tried to close the door, but I couldn't. The man had come out of the station and grabbed my door. I hadn't seen him approach.
Who were you talking to? He asked.
No one, I said.
Were you calling the police? He asked.
No, I whispered. My hands were shaking. I tried to stick my key in the ignition, but he grabbed the key out of my hand.
You shouldn't have called the police, he said.
He pointed at the red stains on his shirt.
I told you this was just paint.
I know, I said. Please let me go. He threw my keys over his shoulder.
You're not going anywhere.
He grabbed me by the shirt and pulled me out of the car. I begged for him to stop. I don't remember exactly what I said, but it must have been something about how I didn't see anything and I just wanted to leave. He threw me to the ground and then lowered his foot onto my back, pinning me against the dirty asphalt. What do you want?
I don't know anymore, he mumbled.
I tried to scream for help, but I knew that no one would hear me. He pressed his foot so hard against my back that I could barely breathe.
Don't move, he ordered.
I couldn't raise my head off the ground, so I couldn't see him, but I could hear a click. I knew he'd just opened up a pocket knife. Don't, I whimpered. Please. He didn't say anything for a long time. Everything was deathly quiet. Then out of nowhere, I heard police sirens blaring from the road. Instantly, the man raised his foot from my back. I looked up just in time to see him run into the cornfield. In seconds, two police cars pulled up next to me. The cops ran out and asked me what happened. I told them that Rudy's son had attacked me. A few of them ran into the cornfields to find him, while another one sat by me to make sure I was okay. How did you know I was in trouble? I asked. The cop explained that my grandma had called them as soon as I got off the phone with her. She knew something was wrong. The cop found my keys on the ground and told me to go home. I drove straight to my grandparents' house, crying the whole way. The next day, that same cop came to our house and said that they'd found Rudy's body in the bathroom. He'd been stabbed. Unfortunately, his son was never found.
It was a dim, moonless night, and I was on my way back home from visiting family on the outskirts of the city. It was getting late, just after 11 o'clock, when my fuel light came on, warning me I was low on gas. Gritting my teeth, I chugged along for a couple more miles until I spotted a sign for a gas station, half hidden beneath a tangle of vines and weeds. Just before a junction leading onto the highway, I spotted the turning for the gas station and bounced along the gravel slope towards the gas pumps, killing the engine. It was dead at this time of night, and I felt a prickle of unease at the emptiness of the place. I almost got a sense that I wasn't supposed to be here, but I pushed that feeling aside and climbed out, unscrewing fuel tank to fill up. As I was filling up, I threw a casual glance around. There were 4 gas pumps, but the one next to me was out of order. Everything was covered in a faint layer of rust and grime, and there was a smell of raw sewage in the air from the outdoor toilets round the other side. The sooner I got out of here, the better. The tank was almost 3/4 full when headlights flooded the station, and I threw a hand up to shield my eyes from the glare as another car pulled up onto the gravel. It was an old, beat-up Toyota. I watched as it rumbled and shuddered into the port in front of mine, the lights cutting with the engine. I tried not to stare too openly, watching from the corner of my eye as a man climbed out. There was something odd about him the moment I glimpsed his wiry beard and damp, sweat-stained clothes, his face shadowed and taut. When he threw a glance my way, I averted my gaze back to the gas pump, trying to ignore the shiver of dread in my stomach. I knew it was bad to make assumptions based on appearance alone, but something about this guy just screamed shady. The man locked the car and headed round the side of the station where the toilets were. When my tank was full, I returned the pump and screwed back on the cap and headed inside to pay. As I passed by the guy's beat-up Toyota, I glimpsed something strange. A dent in the truck and a splatter of red against the dark gray paintwork. Rust? No, it wasn't the right color. It was something else. Curious, I stepped closer to have a look, then recoiled when something thudded against the inside of the truck. My heart jerked into my throat, and I stared wide-eyed at the truck. What was that? A second later, another thump, and what sounded like a muffled cry. Oh God, was there someone in there? A shadow appeared alongside the building, and I hastily drew away, just as the man came back. I kept my gaze on the ground as I walked past him and into the station, my pulse pounding in my ears. What should I do? If that red stain was blood, and those cries belonged to someone in the truck, should I call the police? Would they even get here in time? I paid as fast as I could and headed back to my car. The guy was already leaving, his turn signal flashing right towards the highway. I started up my engine and drew up behind him, sweat dripping down my neck. Part of me wanted to go the other way and forget I ever saw what I saw, but the other part of me couldn't do that. If someone was in danger, I just couldn't leave them to their fate without doing anything. The car in front turned left at the junction, and so did I. I trailed behind him for a good 20 minutes, keeping some distance between us so that I didn't arouse his suspicions. But given we were the only 2 cars out here at this time, maybe it was suspicious anyway. As the open road gave way to forestry, I started to doubt my decision to follow him. I had no idea where we were, but we seemed to be getting further and further away from civilization, heading out into the middle of nowhere. The road grew twisted, snaking between the trees like a serpent, and at several points, the car in front disappeared around a bend, the midnight fog obscuring him from sight. My grip on the steering wheel grew slick as sweat gathered beneath my palms, my chest getting tighter. What was I doing out here? In front of me, the car's taillight disappeared through the trees, and I slowed the car to a crawl and an eventual stop. I should have turned around and left the weird guy alone. If something happened to me out there, how long would it take for someone to discover me? I shouldn't have gotten involved in the first place. I shook my head, raking a hand through my hair, shoving it back from my face. The road was too narrow here. I would keep going until there was somewhere for me to turn around and go home and pretend I'd seen nothing. What could a guy like me do anyway? Checking my rear view, I pulled back out onto the road and kept driving, the trees seeming to close in around me and form a thick canopy overhead. The headlights barely pierced the gloom, and I sat forward in my seat, my neck and shoulders tense with dread. Then, something caught my attention in the distance, reflecting the lights from the car. As I slowed the car to a crawl, inching closer, I realized it was an old beat-up Toyota, the same car I had been trailing. It was pulled up at the side of the road, the trunk popped open, the car empty. Where had the man gone? I stopped the car and peered out through the window. When I was certain there was nobody there, I climbed out, shivering in the chilly night air. The keys were still in the engine, but the man was gone. So was whoever had been in the trunk of the car. I walked over to it and peered inside. More blood and a grimy strip of rag. Someone had definitely been gagged and tied up. But where were they now? Had he taken them into the forest? I looked around and my gaze snagged something. Upturned dirt and grass, drag marks leading between the trees, dotted with specks of blood. Fear wrapped around my chest like a cold hand, and I fumbled to get my phone out of my pocket. I needed to call the police. Someone could be getting murdered out here. My fingers shook as I dialed 911, dread sinking low in my stomach, when an automated voice said, "No service." Of course there was no service out here in the middle of nowhere. That was probably why the man had driven out here. Nobody around to help. I bit hard on my lip, scanning my gaze through the trees. What if the man came back while I was still here? If I could drive somewhere with service, I might be able to call for help and direct them back to this area. No need to put myself in unnecessary danger. I headed back to my car and was about to climb behind the wheel when I heard it. The sound of footfalls echoing beneath the canopy. Heavy, gasping breaths. I looked up and a figure appeared between the trees, a pale specter against the gloom. At first, I thought it was the man, but the figure was too small, too pale. It was a young woman. "Oh my God," I muttered, hurrying towards her. "Are you okay?" As she drew closer, I noticed the splash of red on the front of her clothes and the hollow look in her eyes. She was sobbing between each pant, her shoulders trembling. Then, I realized she was hiding something. A knife. A blade stained with red blood. I took a step back, my eyes going wide. What happened? "Please, you have to help me," the girl cried. He took me into the forest. He was going to kill me." Her hands shook as she held out the knife. I had to do it. I had no choice. He was going to kill me," she repeated, dropping the knife to the ground. I took a tentative step towards her and nodded. "All right, you're safe now," I said. "I'll take you to the hospital and we can call the police." The girl nodded and climbed into the front passenger seat, still shaking. With one last glance towards the forest, eerily still and silent, I started up the engine and drove off, leaving the abandoned car behind me in the gloom.
My name is Sean, and I'm 28 years old. A few months ago, I was checking out Craigslist, and I saw a really nice cell phone, an even nicer price. I contacted the seller immediately, and we arranged a meeting. The transaction was very fast. We met at a particular street. The guy who sold it to me was about 40 years old. Pretty normal and average-looking guy. He was polite and allowed me to test the phone. It was working perfectly, and although it was used, it looked brand new. "Thanks. I'm glad I got this. Great deal," I said as I left.
"Thank you. Take care,"
the man replied, as we shook hands like two gentlemen who sealed a business deal. I live with my girlfriend, Doris. One night, as we were sleeping, my new phone started to ring. It was 3 a.m. "Damn, who could that be?" "Hello?" I mumbled, still cranky from being awakened by the noise, answering the call but trying to snap out of my sleep. At first, there was no answer from the other side. But then, a strange noise was produced, and after that, a scream. So loud that I actually dropped the phone, being caught by surprise. "What the hell?" I picked up the phone again, but the call had been terminated. "Who was that?" my girlfriend asked.
"I don't know. I got a call from an unknown number. I heard a piercing scream, and I got scared. I don't know, probably a stupid prank. I'm going back to sleep," I said to Doris.
"Yeah, we should just turn off our phones while we're in bed, Sean. People are allowed to rest."
Agreed.
Everything was normal after that eventful night. I took my girlfriend's advice, and anytime we wanted to be alone, we just turned our phones off. I didn't even take it to the bedroom anymore. Instead, I just placed it on a shelf in the living room. Yet, one night, the cell phone rang once again. I looked at my watch and realized that it was precisely the same hour as last time, as the same anonymous call at 3 a.m. This time, I was home alone, since my girlfriend was visiting her sister for the weekend. It was Saturday night, and I was genuinely freaked out. I went to the living room and picked up the phone. Again, it was an unknown number. I wasn't very hopeful about getting a proper answer, but still. "Hello? Who is this?" I asked. Someone was speaking at the other end, but the words were very distorted. It sounded like someone was in fear. I felt a sense of dread and terror from the other side. "I don't understand. I can't hear you properly. Please speak loudly," I asked, feeling a natural instinct of solidarity, as if that person needed my help. The person spoke again and again, repeated the same thing. It was an address. I wrote it down. "What do you want me to do?" I asked, with my hands shaking. I got a simple answer, coming from the distortion and the feeble voice. "Search underground." After hearing these words, the phone call was ended. "This is just too weird," I said to myself as I sat down on the couch. I kept looking at the address, and it was from a town not far away from where I lived, probably an hour's drive. I got dressed and had a cup of coffee. You might call me stupid, but I'm a very inquisitive person, so I knew I had to go visit that address. I couldn't just wait. It was like my sixth sense was in control now. I drove there as fast as I could, and within 45 minutes, I arrived. It was a big house in a very quiet and small street. There were other houses nearby, but they appeared to be abandoned. But not from the one address. There was a car parked inside the garage, and I could see lights on inside the house. It was now 5 a.m. "Okay, I'm here. Now what?" I said to myself, trying to think before remembering the additional words from the voice. "Search underground." There was a big garden attached to the property. That was a start. Suddenly, I got a text message from an unknown number. The words said, "Dig. Behind the garage, you'll find a shovel inside." I climbed the wall and was now inside the property. I followed the instructions of the eerie anonymous text. Trying to be as silent as possible, I picked up the shovel, which was indeed inside the garage, and now I was digging behind it. After a while, I found something. A human head, still composing. I couldn't help but scream. Bad idea. Within seconds, someone came from inside the house.
"Hey! Who's there? What are you doing? Come here!"
A man screamed, and I was surprised to see that it was precisely the man who sold me the cell phone. I was now running like hell towards my car. Another individual appeared from the house. I was now being chased by both of them. Fortunately, I was empowered by the adrenaline. Plus, I still managed to throw the shovel at them, which at least forced them to stop, avoiding being hit. I drove back as fast as I could, parking near the closest police station, and as expected, my chasers didn't follow me. I ran inside the police station and explained everything. The corpse buried in the garden, and the men who lived in the house who tried to stop me from revealing my findings. Within hours, the police captured the men. They were criminals, robbers, and murderers, organized and experienced. The cell phone that I bought from one of them was a stolen item, and I was shocked to know that the person that I found dead, buried, was actually the owner of the same cell phone, a woman named Monica. I returned the cell phone to the police, of course. As for those mysterious phone calls and the text message, I guess I'll never know for sure who it was. But given all the circumstances in which those contacts happened, I do believe that it was Monica's spirit before crossing over, trying to warn me about the killers so that Monica could have peace.